Hey, it's Larry Goins. How's everybody doing? Welcome to the biweekly Q&A calls for Inner Circle students only. Last few weeks have been really good, and I had a lot of good questions, and which is really cool. So I'm just going to let you jump right in. I know we got a lot of people on the line. Some people like to sit back and listen. Some people like to ask questions. So if anybody has a question, just go ahead and jump right in. But not everybody at once.
Well, I'll ask a question.
Oh, cool. Who's this?
This is Don.
Hey, Don. How you doing?
Doing good. Just did a successful wholesale deal.
You just did one?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. One problem that I ran into, though, when I was marketing it, is that I was getting a lot of people who represented themselves as end buyers. And yet it turned out that their real intent was wholesaling the property. I was wholesaling it. Their intent apparently was to put it under contract and then assign it to someone else.
Right.
My assignment agreement specified that it could not be reassigned. It also called for an earnest money deposit, which people were not following through on. And I'm just wondering if that's the nature of the game or if there are certain things that I ought to be doing differently to pre-screen the people so that I don't run into this. I ran into three cases in which people represented themselves as the ultimate buyer, and they couldn't even come up with earnest money deposit.
Well, let me ask you this question, Don. When you said they were representing themselves as the ultimate buyer, did you ask them specifically, are you buying this property for yourself, or are you buying it to resell to someone else?
I probably was not that explicit.
Okay. What I would also do, anytime somebody's wanting to buy a property from me, I would ask them, you know, well, let me ask you a question. What are you looking to do with the property? You know, and if they're wanting to move in it, oh, great, great. You know, do you have a family? And you're really quizzing them to give them the opportunity to fess up without point blank calling them out on it. But if they
I thought you were in the control room.
Hi.
Say that again.
But no. I'm here. Sorry. I thought you were in the control room.
All right, Don, could you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I would be, you know, you're asking them questions. Oh, you're looking to live in it. Great. Do you have kids that are going to the school? What are you going to do? Or if they say, I'm doing it as an investment, I might say, well, okay, what type of investment are you looking for? Are you a wholesaler? Are you going to fix and flip it? Are you going to fix it and rent it out? Or what are you going to do? If they say they're a wholesaler, I would say, unfortunately, you cannot wholesale this property because I am a wholesaler myself, and I do not allow reassignments of my contract. So you would have to physically close on it yourself and then close with your buyer. So my question to you is, if you're a wholesaler, number one, you need to send me over a copy of a bank statement showing me that you have the money or a commitment letter from a lender showing that they will lend on the property for transaction funding.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. That way they're not assigning your contract. You don't care what they do with it after they pay you.
Absolutely, right.
Yeah, you don't care what they do with it, you know, just as long as they pay you. But, you know, there's a lot of people out there that'll talk a good game, but if you ask them just a couple of specific questions, you know, it'll pull the rug out from under them. and let them know that, hey, you're not going to mess around with them. You know what you're doing. Like, you know, oh, you're a wholesaler. Great. How long have you been doing this? Oh, okay. How many deals have you closed? How many did you close last month? Oh, okay. Oh, you haven't closed. Oh, okay. What about this year? How many have you closed this year? Okay. Are you using your own money or are you using a lender or somebody else's funds? Or are you just assigning contracts? What are you doing? You know, if they say, I've got my own money, oh, okay, so you wouldn't have a problem showing a bank statement showing that you have money in the bank. You see what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. Does that help?
That helps a lot, yes.
Good. Don't let anybody fool you. There's a lot of people out there that will try to talk a game with you. You know, so don't let them mess with you. And don't, I mean, because this is serious stuff, and it's your money, and you don't want people wasting your time.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's my money, and the person I was dealing with, the seller, you know, she had a lot involved in it, and I felt a responsibility for, you know, for the transaction to go through, and they were messing with all of us.
You know what? That's a good sign that you care because you felt a lot of responsibility to the seller to make sure the transaction went through. So not only are you protecting them but or yourself, but you're protecting them as well. And that shows a lot of character on your part. So that's all the more reason not to let somebody mess with you. And just call them out on it. Have a little list of a few questions that you might want to ask. Maybe you can start a little list of questions. You know, what do you plan to do with the property? Oh, I'm an investor. Oh, what type of investor are you? Are you wholesaling it? Are you going to retail it? Are you going to fix it and rent it out? Oh, you're a wholesaler. Okay, so what you're going to do is buy this house from me and wholesale it. Are you trying to buy it without any money, or can you show me a bank statement? Because we only sell to cash buyers. Not your buyer's cash, but your cash.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yep, that's what I will do.
There you go. There you go. And if they don't have money, you can say, well, you know what you can do is, you know, I would be glad to help you, but maybe you can bird dog some properties for me. Go out and beat the bushes and find some deals, and I'll help you put them together. And you can bird dog them for me.
Hmm. Just turn it around on them, yeah.
There you go. There you go.
Okay.
Cool. Did that help, Don?
Yeah, that helped greatly. I appreciate that.
Excellent, man. No problem. No problem. And let me know if you need any more help with that or you know, need some more questions or whatever to ask. But I would come up with a list of about 5 questions that you can ask.
Okay.
So, yeah, cool.
I'll have them ready, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Just write them on a little 4x6 card or something or put them on a post-it note on your computer or something.
Right.
Cool. Anybody else have a question you'd like to jump in here with?
Larry?
Yes.
My name is Barb Eichlin. I have not been to your class yet. It's coming up in July. This is my very first phone call.
Oh, cool. Well, welcome to the call and welcome to Inner Circle.
Thank you. So my question is, do you get involved in or do you personally set up trusts for your purchases? And if so, is there a point where it's not meaningful? Like if you're doing a day trading, is it not meaningful to set them up in the trust? How do you do
really
that?
Good question. You only really need trust if you're going to buy and hold, okay? In
okay.
my opinion. Other people might tell you different, but in my opinion, the purpose of a trust is a first line of defense for anonymity.
Right.
And if you're just buying and selling, you know, you're only going to own it for 30 minutes unless you're doing a fix and flip. And if you're doing a fix and flip, people know who you are anyway because you're the one dealing with the contractors and all that good stuff. But when you use a trust is when you're buying a subject to property, where the seller is has a mortgage on it, and you're going to take over that mortgage and make the payments on it, so you're buying it subject to. So you'll have your seller deeded into a trust, a land trust, and then they will change the beneficial interest to you. And the other time you would do it is if you're just buying a property for rental purposes, to rent it, or to lease option it, or something like that.
Okay.
That's the main time that you would use a trust. And when you come to my office, I'm going to give you a flash drive that's got all that stuff on it. You'll have trust agreements and everything.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll get all that stuff.
You know much about the laws in Pennsylvania for trusts?
No, not specifically, but I know there's people up there that do them.
Okay, super.
Yeah, there's only one state that I don't think they do trust in, and I believe that's Tennessee. Somebody might know the answer to that on here, but I don't know if they do or not. But that's the only state I'm aware of that you might not do them in. So I hope that helped.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Awesome, awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing you in July.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. All right, cool. Anybody else have a question you want to jump in here with?
I'll ask another one if everybody's going to be real quiet tonight.
Sure, no problem. Yeah, sometimes it's like they're fighting to get a question in, and sometimes there's a lot of wait time. So, but that's okay. Yeah, go ahead.
In your program, and I'm sure we'll find out a lot more in July, but are we basically setting up websites and data gathering and capturing systems so that we can pull together, you know, buyers lists, sellers, realtors, HUD properties, all that kind of stuff? It's kind of, it all automates itself.
You mean, is that what you're going to do at my office? Is that what you're asking? Oh, okay. Basically, we've got a working office, and, you know, where we're buying and selling properties, making offers on properties, marketing the properties, building our buyers list. So when you come to my office, we're going to spend the days in my office going through my whole model, what we do and how we do it. You're going to sit down with each person, see what they're doing, how they're doing it. You can look over their shoulder and see what they're doing, and then we're going to help you get all this stuff set up so you can go back home and emulate at your house what we do in our office.
Perfect.
Yeah. That's the whole purpose of it. That's why we call it OJT, on-the-job training.
Hello, Larry. This is John Eichlund, Barb's husband.
What's going on?
Well, I'll be coming down with her in July and two of our sons at the same time.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
So I do have a question. When you're buying the HUD home specifically, that type of buying, how is it you familiarize yourself, or is it just by happenstance or through the art of doing it? Do you become familiar with the area, say, in Knoxville, Tennessee, or wherever you might buy? How do you know what part of Knoxville is good? Is it just by doing it, or is there a way to find out what areas are preferential over other areas?
Well, I can answer that in a couple of different ways. The first way is I can tell you what we do, okay? What we do is we make an offer on everything in the state that we're working in. So we analyze each property individually and then come up with a number of ARV based on not a CMA, but based on pulling comps, pulling rent comps, looking at the pictures, looking at the PCR on HUDHomestore.com, and going to HUDHomevalues.com and getting the data there as well, and looking at all that information to determine the ARV and the amount of repairs and the crime in the area and that sort of thing. And then we determine what kind of number we can put on that property. And then we put that number on the spreadsheet, and we got a VA that makes that bid for us on the property. And so once we get a bid accepted, then we go in and drill down deeper and look at it more specific to see if we really do want to send in our deposit. And if that's the case, then we'll go ahead and send in our deposit. But at the same time, we start marketing the property. We start doing more due diligence. We might send somebody out to take pictures or somebody out to either do a rehab estimate or just do a walkthrough and look at it, look at the area more. We're driving the street on Google Earth. You know, just anything we can to make sure that we're making a good decision. And then we're marketing the property at the same time. We hire somebody either off of Craigslist or a local temporary job placement service in the area to put out our bandit signs for us. I say bandit signs. The signs that say foreclosure, and then they have the price and the phone number. And we send them about 30 signs, and they put 10 out this week. And then in a couple in a week, they put another 10 out. And then in a week, they put another 10 out because, you know, they're going to get knocked over, stolen, code enforcement picks them up or somebody picks them up. So we just send them enough signs so they could keep a bunch of them out till we get the property sold. Does that make
sense?
How else?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yes, I understand that concept. What are your different ways to find qualified contractors, even, you know, do you use realtors? I know realtors, when selling homes, have to have certain things. Then I do that in our area for realtors. But in other states, how would you go about finding, you know, reputable and reliable contractors to go do the work you need done on any rehab?
Well, first of all, we don't do the work, okay? We might get maybe an estimate from a contractor, less often than more, because we used to get two or three rehab estimates on every property we would get under contract. But invariably, we'd send people the rehab estimate, and then if they did end up using one of those contractors and the contractor didn't do a good job or walked off the job or whatever, then the buyer of the house was calling us back, "I used your contractor." It wasn't my contractor. All I did was get an estimate, you know. So, but here's the way you can find several contractors. Number one, ask for referrals from realtors, okay? You know, if they have a good contractor that they know, like, and trust, ask for referrals from attorneys, from appraisers, and home inspectors. And another great source that we use is Craigslist, as well as sites like handyman.com, needcontractor.com, and reliableremodeler.com. Did you get those?
Yes, we did. Thank you very much.
Sure, man. I hope that helped.
Yeah. Also, on the insurance side, once you've put your bid in and it gets accepted, you go through the process of asking for a certificate of insurance from the whoever it might be, electrician, plumber, handyman, whatever. You get COI from all of them?
Certificate of insurance? You mean like from the contractor,
yes,
who's given me an estimate?
Not from the estimate, but once you have them on site and start working, is that at the point at which you...
Oh, if I was going to rehab it, but see, I don't rehab houses. But if I was going to rehab the house, I would ask for a copy of their license and a copy of their insurance and their liability insurance. And I don't typically get a bond or make them show me their bond. If they're licensed with the state, normally the state requires a bond. All a bond really does is if a contractor walks off the job and you paid them money but they didn't finish the job, the bond pays to finish the job, okay? So, but as long as you you work your contractor in the sense of you let them do work, then you pay them. You let them do more work, then you pay them. You let them do more work, then you pay them. As long as you do that, then you don't have to worry about them getting ahead of you.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yep. Thank you.
That help?
Yes.
Awesome. That's good. Cool. Any more questions from anybody? I know we got quite a few people on here. I saw the count whenever I dialed in, and but you know, sometimes people just sit in and listen. Sometimes people sit in and ask questions. But this is your chance if you want to ask some questions, anything, if you want to talk about the market. about what I'm doing, about any specific deal you're working on or anything like that. I'm here to help you in any way.
What is your opinion on the market, Larry?
As far as, can you be a little bit more specific?
What are the trends, I guess, nationally? Is it pretty much overall going up slightly, remaining flat in some areas, do you know?
Where do you live?
Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. Well, you've seen the market, you know, you've seen the market start to go up, and there's a lot of pressure in certain markets like California, Florida, and, you know, like Arizona and Nevada and places in New York and whatnot. But there's still some good deals to be had out there, but the inventory isn't quite as high as it used to be with HUD and REOs. So you have to look for alternate sources of properties. That's one of the reasons that we have expanded out with our HUD part of our business and are now buying HUD in, I think it's 5 different states right now, and we're moving toward buying in 16 states total. And guys, don't be worried that I'm coming to your state and I'm going to be your competition, because I've got a lot of overhead, I've got a lot of people in my office. I can't pay near as much for a house as what you can, so I am not your competition, okay? My goal is, in moving to another state, you know, if I can just get, you know, 1 or 2 or 3 deals per state per month that I go into, then I'll be happy. And we make an offer on all the properties available to investors in the entire state. So if we just get 1, 2, or 3 a month, we're happy. So don't think I'm going to be your competition at all, because I'm not. You can pay a lot more for a house than I can. So as far as REOs, there's not as many REOs on the market. And we also do a lot of bandit signs. We've spent about $28,000 so far this year on bandit signs, but we've only picked up, I think it's 3, maybe 4 wholesale deals out of all those bandit signs that we've had put out. And
wow.
But we've brought in over 1,600 leads. So what we found is we've got a lot of leads in there, but they're leads that are from people who have a mortgage on a property. Maybe they have little or no equity. So we are going back through those leads, and we're calling them back and see if the sellers would entertain selling their property subject to the existing mortgage and have us just take over their mortgage for them. And then we'll turn around and sell it either on a lease option, or we will sell it and get a larger down payment and let somebody else take that over as well, or just make the spread either way.
Double closing?
Yes. Yeah, we could do a double closing, or we could just, what we do is we get it under contract and then we start marketing it. And once we find our buyer that the seller approves, if we're going to back out, if we're going to, you know, put the two of them together and bow out of the deal, then what we're going to do is we will have a double closing. Or we'll just buy it and keep it. If there's some equity there, we'll keep it and do a lease option to another buyer tenant or tenant buyer.
So what's the explanation of how the subject to works when the house is underwater? What's your strategy?
Okay. Say there's a house that it's worth $200 and they owe $210. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. Well, here's the only strategy you can do with that. If the numbers work where the payment is low enough to where you could find somebody else to go in it and they could handle the payment, say, you know, they owe $200 or they owe $210 and it's worth $200. Well, you talk to your seller. You get your seller to agree to buy the property or sell you the property subject to, and then you go out and you find a buyer that's willing to pay $210 for the property, but maybe they have $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 down 5% down would be, what is that, $200,000 or $20,000, excuse me. 10% would be $20,000, and 5% would be $10,000. So if you found somebody that had $10,000 to put down, you keep the $10,000, you put them together, and then they start making the payments to the seller.
Okay.
Yeah. And you just step out of the deal because there's no equity there for you to get a back end in the future.
Right.
Yeah. Did that help?
Yeah. How likely is that scenario to pan out, finding, you know, getting the seller to do that and finding a buyer?
Well, I can tell you this. There's a lot of people out there that are just tired of making the mortgage payment. Maybe they've been transferred, or maybe they're wanting to buy another house, or maybe they're wanting to move, or whatever it is. But there's a lot of people out there in that situation that they just don't want to pay the mortgage anymore. So I can tell you this. Of the 1,600 leads we got from our bandit signs, we closed three, maybe four, but I think it was three deals. But we just went back a few weeks ago and started recalling all of the people that had mortgages on their properties. And after talking to about 10 or 15, we've got one under contract, and I shouldn't say 10 or 15. We've probably talked to more than that. But we've already got one under contract, and we have another six deals where they're sending in their mortgage statement for us to review and see if we can help them out.
Okay.
So it's very likely. There's a lot of people out there that want that kind of help.
And does your system keep tabs on things? One of my weak points is keeping organized and remembering where things are and who I called and who needs to be called back. And
yeah, that's we use a database program, a CRM called Podio, P-O-D-I-O, and there is a free version of it. But it's totally customizable, and it's very, very easy to use. It's very easy to set up, and that's what we use. There's other, you know, out-of-the-box kind of stuff that you can get. You can get RealFlow. You can get FreedomSoft, REI Black Book, out-of-the-box, but we use Podio because it's totally customizable. And, in fact, we have it set up so when somebody calls a number off of our bandit sign and they leave a voicemail, we use a service called Freedom Voice. And what happens is when they call and leave that message on Freedom Voice, and they might say, like, hey, I saw your sign that says you buy houses. I got a house I want to sell. Call me back. Then it emails that message to Podio and creates a contact record in Podio and saves that recording in Podio, and it creates a task for our acquisition guy to call and check that message or listen to that message, log into Podio and listen to that message, and then they can call them back and add the other information like their first name, last name, and the address of the property and all that good stuff and the status of the property and everything.
Perfect.
Does that also inform you when taxes are due, insurance, everything? You can put everything on there about the property?
We don't do that, and we do that in QuickBooks, or you can hire somebody to do your servicing, like I believe it's called National Mortgage Servicing, or I believe it's their website is AugustREI.com. There's several different what we call seller finance servicing companies out there, and National Mortgage Servicing, or I think it's MortgageServicingCenter.com. They're a big one, and so is AugustREI. They're a big one, and they work with a lot of people that do subject to deals and seller finance deals and lease option deals.
Okay.
Yeah, and they'll do all that for you. Cool, I hope that helped.
Yes, for sure.
Great. Any more questions anybody got, want to throw out?
I'll ask one.
Sure.
Do you do anything with probate or people who've died one way or, you know, the other? And if so, sort of what techniques do you use?
I have done probate in the past, but it is not something that I do on a regular basis, and it is not something that I've done in a long time. Probate is a little different animal in the sense that you're dealing with situations where people have lost a loved one, and it's a little bit more of a touchy situation. You got to be very careful how you handle it. And the best way to find probate is to do direct mail and then have them call you from your direct mail and just be totally upfront and honest with them and say, I understand it's a really tough time for you and I'm very sorry to hear about your loss, but the reason that I'm calling is a lot of people in your situation find themselves with a property that they need to dispose of, and they need to dispose of it pretty quick, and I'm here to help you. Yes, I'm in the business to make a profit, you know, and I'm not trying to take advantage of anybody, but it is a source of properties, and it helps me and it helps you at the same time.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah, and you can either get those lists at the county where you live, or you can also buy them. There's websites out there that you can buy probate leads in specific zip codes. And if I'm not mistaken, the biggest one out there, it's actually called probateleads.com, I believe is the name of it.
Okay.
But if you just Google it, probate leads, you know, you'll direct mail list, probate direct mail list, something like that, you'll find it.
Okay.
Yeah. That's good. Cool. Anybody else have a question?
Larry, it's Barb again. Do you ever do anything with or have you ever used or heard of the repository lists?
I don't do anything with them. Not that there's anything wrong with it or anything. I just don't do anything with it. We're working primarily the bandit signs and HUD and REOs. And that keeps us pretty busy right there. There's a lot of different things you can do.
Okay.
But we work primarily the bandit signs. And we don't even do direct mail anymore. Direct mail's just so expensive.
Do you find any patterns with bandit signs? I mean, where I am, the different people say that they'll work for a while and then not work and then work again and stuff. But do you find any patterns either geographic or based on what you say on the signs that is consistently more effective than other approaches?
Well, what we've started doing a little bit different is we don't have I buy houses signs anymore. We have a girl in our office that works with us, and her name is Gabby. So we created these signs that say Gabby buys houses. And we actually had a silhouette picture of her put on the sign at the top in the middle. And it's actually a picture of her, but it's a silhouette, just like a black outline or whatever. And it really does look like her. And we put that picture, and we put Gabby Buys Houses, and then the phone number, 855-GABBY-BUYS.
Huh.
And we found that we do get a better response with that than just the I Buy Houses signs. And I think the reasoning behind it, and I believe the reason that it works better, is there's a certain number of people out there that would rather talk to a female than a man, and maybe they would feel less threatened or feel like it would be an easier or better conversation, especially if they were talking about their house or whatever. So, you know, a lot of people might think, oh, this, you know, the I buy houses people, this guy's just wanting to take advantage of me, you know. So there might be that mentality there. But, you know, with the female, it's a little less threatening. So that's kind of the reasoning behind it. And it tends to work pretty well. But as far as patterns, you know, we've had some signs that have been up for a long, long time, and then some signs that don't stay up long at all. So it just depends on where you put them and how often you put them out. And we've had calls, you know, many months after the fact when they've been, when the signs have been put out. So some of them linger for a long time, and some of them get taken up pretty quick. And if we get a call from code enforcement, we go and take the signs up, and we tell our sign jockeys not to put any signs out in that area anymore because we don't want to get in trouble. We're not going to go ask for permission in advance, but if they tell us it's not allowed there, we're going to stay out of that area and then just go put them somewhere else.
Okay.
That help?
Yep.
Good, good.
Yep.
Cool. Anybody else have a question? You guys have had some good questions tonight. Anybody got one you want to throw out? Well, I want you guys to remember that you can always email me or call me anytime, you know, during the week, whenever. And I'm here for you. Just shoot me an email to larry@larrygoins.com. And I'm more than happy to answer your question anytime, or you can call my office, and I'll be happy to answer your questions and help you get going and get started. Anything you have a question about, I'm here for you. We really, really appreciate your business, and we really look forward to working with you and hearing about your success stories. And thanks a lot, guys, for being on. I really appreciate it. Anybody else have a question before we go?
I just wanted to tell you thank you, Larry, for helping me out with the emails that you responded to.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's my pleasure. My pleasure. I'm glad to do it. It's what I do. I enjoy doing it. I love doing it. I'll stay on here as long as you guys want. And, you know, I just really like doing this, and I like helping people. You know, I enjoy the success and hearing the success stories and how it's changing people's lives, and that's really cool. I get a kick out of that. And, you know, and the bonus is I make money doing it, so it's really cool, too. But I really appreciate you guys' business, and I appreciate, you know, your confidence in us. And if there's anything that me or my team can ever do for you, please don't hesitate to reach out for us or to us. So appreciate all you guys being on here tonight. And like I say, if you have any questions between now and the next call, just shoot me an email or give me a call. I'll be glad to help you any way I can. All right, guys.
Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, guys. Have a great night.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.